D-Maze, Vingan, and Donick on a Friday afternoon. We are talking Titans-Rams for this segment. Then Chad Withrow is going to join us. We'll talk Tennessee-Georgia, Vanderbilt-South Carolina, two massive games in these parts, if you will. Tennessee at home against Georgia, trying to break the streak. Is Georgia still the juggernaut? Is Tennessee maybe even better than we thought, even though the whole drama with Nico, we're going to get into that heavily. And then ask D-Maze at 5 o'clock. We're going to have some fun with that. The practice, the injury report is now officially out. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, J.C. Latham, Devondre Sweat, officially out. Khalil Mullings, the backup rookie running back, doubtful. Kevin Winston, rookie, doubtful. I don't think we're going to see either one of them. That's on a secondary level. We don't know how much L'Jarius Sneed is going to play. He's going to play. They have not revealed the workload yet. It does look like the Rams have an issue at offensive guard. Steve Avila is listed as doubtful, and tight end Kobe Parkinson is also doubtful. But the Rams are relatively healthy, and so that leads us to really the question of this segment, D-Mace, and that is, this is a big game for Brian Callahan. After the opening act where he took as much heat, I think, for game management, et cetera, nationally, as any other coach. And so all eyes are going to be on him. You've got the home crowd, which I think, as we talked about, for opening day, it could go either way. He could get booed if they have another, if they struggle in general, or especially if they have another game management type of thing where everybody's kind of saying, see, I've been telling you, he's not doing well in this. He doesn't know the rules. All of these things that are, he's getting labeled. Right? He has got to fight that and turn that somehow. Can he do it?
Well,
sometimes it's tougher to be at home when you have issues like that, right?
We will find out because, you know, the last thing, some of the last things they've seen of this coaching staff hasn't been good, whether it's, you know, not challenging a play, not knowing the rules, or, you know, the sort of snafu he had last year with the timeout and not going for it, calling the timeout and then going for it and still not making it. It was just a few things that you know made people sort of scratch their head and question. And I get it. Last year was sort of every head coach I think in their first year goes through things that you know it's part of the learning process. But you expect the next year it should be a much better, but then you start off on the wrong foot, you know, in the first game. You can't have those things moving forward. There shouldn't be a question, especially not at home, because the last thing you want to do is lose your home crowd early, especially in the situation the Titans are in. They're building a new stadium right next door. They distracted the quarterback first overall. You don't need your fan base to be booing you as a head coach because you do something, again, that compromises and jeopardizes what your team is trying to accomplish on the field. So I don't expect that from him. If it does happen, then, man, oh, man, there's only so much you can say about a coach if that continues to happen over and over again. But, you know, playing at home gives you an added advantage, I think. It's the first game of the season here, and people want to see how well, you know, the quarterback looks up close and personal.
I'm concerned, too, about the players themselves. I didn't get the sense last year, as bad as it was, that the players were sitting there going, what's the deal with this coach? Mm-hmm. What is the deal? I do worry that if there are back-to-back issues with rule, or, you know, a challenge or decision to, you know, of game management that gets booed, the awareness of that, does that filter into the locker room at all? I think the players like Brian Callahan. I don't think they dislike him, but I think you start losing a sense of, hey, is what we're doing working here? We're working towards something. Are we getting anywhere here, or are we just spinning our wheels? So I want to hear from our listeners on that front. What would you like to see? What would make you feel a little bit better about Brian Callahan? Or are you convinced this is going to be a big problem going forward? 615-737-1025, our phone and text line. driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let me start with Adam in Portland to get it going here. Adam, welcome.
Hey, Willie, man. Hey, number one, you and D-Mace have the exact same beard. I said that. Like, have y'all noticed this? Like, it's the same.
D-Mace is copying
thing.
Me.
Yeah, I'm copying
way.
Willie now. Yeah. I embraced it now. It's good.
Embracing the salt.
Well, they say exactly. When you're around folks all the time, man. Well, all right. So check this out, man. I got a real problem with this head coach, but this is my thing. Like, I think you nailed it, Willie. At least Section 1, I can't speak for everybody, but at least Section 140, we will abuse him if he starts getting whacked, man. Like, especially with Cam, if I see him leaving Cam on an island by himself and getting him hurt or getting him just smoked, dude, we're not gonna put up with that stuff, man. Like, I think the writing's on the wall with him, though. I think he's gonna have a good game because he knows Amy's just as crazy as her daddy, I think, when it comes to making decisions. And so he's gonna have to have a good show, or it's gonna be a short tenure. I don't think he's gonna make it probably the next 5 or 6 weeks, but it starts this week. And this is a game we can win. I'm picking the Titans to win 24-23, but it's going to be I understand that Latham's out, man, but at the same time they gave up 6 sacks last week with him. So they're going to have to scheme and figure out a way to protect our quarterback and give him a chance to actually showcase. And I think this is going to be a good game. If it's not Callahan, we will make sure you hear it from us.
All right, Adam, thank you.
Well, I mean,
615-737-1025.
It's gone. I mean, listen, if he does some of those same things that he did the past game, then yes, I think the Boo Birds will come out. You know, but as I want to go back to quickly to the whole, the players losing faith in Brian Callahan. It takes a lot for players to head down that road, because when you go down that road, it's hard to turn around. It's hard to turn around and try to think otherwise. It's going to take more for the players to truly lose faith in him. And it's not going to come from Calvin Ridley. It's not going to come from J.C. Latham. It's not going to come from Cushenberry. It's going to come from the quarterback if it comes from anybody. If the quarterback loses faith in him, then, yeah, as long as the quarterback continues to go out there and play through what else, because you got to understand, you got to ask yourself, when all of this stuff, when things are going not the way you want them to go, you got to ask yourself first, am I doing what I'm supposed to do? You know,
yep.
Am I doing my job? And frankly, the film that I watched, you wasn't doing your job. The coach didn't help you, yeah. But players, y'all wasn't doing your job. So before you turn on Brian Callahan, you need to make sure you're doing your job first. And I want fans to understand that too. Like, before you turn and say you want Callahan out of here, and listen, if he's not winning, then eventually that's going to happen. That decision will be made. But you need to ask yourself, okay, are the other guys doing the job that they were tasked to do? Calvin Ridley, Elikai O'Manor, Gunnar Helm, Dan Moore Jr., Kush, are y'all doing the job that y'all are asked to do? Jeffrey Simmons. Then once you get past that, then you can lean on the coach. But outside of that, if you're not doing your job, you can't lose faith in the coach.
I always, and a texter pointed this out too on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. There's a couple different thoughts that he has, but it centers in on what does Amy Adams observe? If this goes bad, I remember there was a famous game, and it was when you were playing, D-Mace, when you guys started off 1-4. Remember that? You guys lost to Washington with Danny Werfel quarterbacking. It looked bad. Mm-hmm. And Bud Adams, it was very frustrating. The crowd started booing a little bit. And it was 2002. 2001 hadn't gone well because of all the injuries. And you're like, wait a minute, are we hit the end of the line here with this group? And Bud Adams said, it looks like we're getting out coached. That was a quote in the Tennessean the next day. And so if Amy Adams is out there and all of this, she is aware of the noise. Her circle of people also are very aware of this. And there's a bunch of boos. I worry about how that can snowball and all of a sudden take up a lot of slack in the road. Despite of all these things that you're saying, which I think are valid points, it's only the second week. And I'm kind of painting a worst-case scenario here because it can go the other way as well. But I do see a scenario where you've got an issue of it could look ugly because of this defense you're playing and you are compromised along the offensive line. You've got a rookie quarterback and a bad roster. That is a tough hand to play for the coach, but you've got to look like you are doing the absolute best you can do with what you have. And I'm not sure that that's going to go across very well. Let's see what we've got on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike says, does it seem to you guys like the Titans get more paper cuts than any team in the NFL?
He's saying minor injuries.
I don't know. I don't know what he's going
paper
with
cuts,
that.
I guess it would be minor injuries. Paper cuts, the small injuries that keep you out, nagging things to keep you out. I don't know if it's – well, listen, the Titans have had their share of injuries over the last 5 years, and we can chronicle them, you know, especially during the Vrabel era where for that, what, two seasons, I mean, they played more players than anybody just about in the NFL. So the Titans have had their sort of history of dealing with injuries. You know, this one, it's sort of different.
I guess what what he's implying is they do things to hurt themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
The paper cut. I think that's what he's saying. And I do think it would help Brian Callahan to not have a game where that's the story. Mm-hmm. Where the story is, boy, they shot themselves in the foot. 13 penalties. The penalties will be a big one on Sunday because that's a part of the label. The label is they're not disciplined. Those who go in with a skeptical eye on Callahan are looking at penalties. They're looking at game management. They're looking at play calling. And this is the spotlight they're in. Dave in Big Rock on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. Score 35 points and win a football game. Well, all right, let's just do that.
Hey. It's as easy as that.
What are the chances they're going to score 35? D-Base, I honestly think this is the best way for the Titans to win is, and this is maybe not ideal, this maybe is not in Brian Callahan's DNA, it's a little more of a Mike Vrabel, Jeff Fisher DNA, mm-hmm. Win with defense and special teams. Yeah. I think the defense gave you enough last week that you could see a scenario where they can contain. Now you've got better special teams to put your defense in a good situation. If they can not turn the ball over and play great special teams and good defense, I can see being in the game. Remember, the Rams won last week 14-9. So they can be a low-scoring team. They can win a game like that. I would not be surprised if you saw a 13-10 game, and that would be good for the Titans. But at the same time, we had a caller yesterday call and said, get out there and throw it around, right? Like if yeah. we were asking, what does the crowd want? What's it going to be like opening? They want to see Cam Ward go. They want to see him showcase. He's the guy they're coming to see.
They want to see what Cam Ward did at Miami just a year ago.
And I don't think that's going to be the formula tomorrow. That would be really hard to imagine. So their best way of winning would be more of a in the trenches, keep it close. Next texter says, part of the job is looking like you have the best hand dealt to you. Well, they don't have the best hand. The Rams have a better team than the Titans. And so I disagree with Adam's optimism on, hey, they're going to win 24-23. It's a toss-up game. I don't think this is a toss-up game. The Titans are decided underdogs in this game.
Yeah. Whew. Man, I don't – 44 points. But if – because I don't see the Rams again, and I could be wrong. I just don't see them as this. I don't look at, after watching them, I don't look at the Rams, I think, like other people look at them. Like, when they saw the Rams on the schedule, oh, this is a loss. No, I don't look at it that way. If the defense plays, for the most part, like they did last week, then I think it would be very hard for, you know, the Rams to fly across the country and pull out a victory if that defense plays the way that they played last week. There's a reason why Bo Nix threw three interceptions. It wasn't
right. I have been bothered about that defense, nationally, by the
exactly.
way. Like, oh, Bo Nix has an. You know, the Titans were only in the game because Bo Nix was off.
No,
I give the Titans. Exactly. I thought the Titans played a very good defensive game.
The Titans defense smothered him at times, and they forced him into bad plays. So this whole narrative, if he would, yeah, that you could say that across the board with any offense. If Cam Ward would have got protected a little bit more, if Calvin Ridley hadn't dropped three passes, if Gunnar
now, I have heard that a lot.
So if that would have happened, it would have been a different game. But it didn't. The same with Bo Nix. The defense forced him to do things that were probably uncharacteristic or they didn't think was going to happen. They forced him into turnovers. They gave him one look and confused him, and he threw right into the into the defense, all while Jeffrey Simmons was bearing down on him. So don't look at this as, oh, the Titans, you know, they just didn't. No, the defense played well. Take out Jeffrey Simmons. There was two plays that really did them in, honestly. Because I would say, you know, that whole debacle at the end of the half, that was all on Brian Callahan. Yes, the defense then has to bail them out. But, listen, you can't put your team in that situation. There were two plays that hurt the Tennessee Titans, I believe. It was that long run. The 50-yard run, which made up a lot of their yardage in the game, because prior to that 50-yard run or wherever, I think it was 50, but outside of that 50-yard run, they were getting stuffed in the run game.
They had done a great job to that point.
So I don't.
And then there was the 50-yard run,
the 15-yard penalty. Yeah.
Well, the 50-yard run was then followed up by another gash to put it in the end zone. They ran it in.
Yes, that
and
was
so.
Toward the end,
all of a sudden, you had that
last 15-yard penalty.
Yes,
to me, did them in. Like, that didn't even give you that took you out of putting your team in a position to have better field position than what you had. So, if the defense plays the way that they did, and that's a big if. Matter of fact, I don't even think it's a big if, because I think the defense has the talent. And the Rams' offense isn't that juggernaut of an offense. But if they play the way that they did last week, then this is going to be a far different game.
A couple of quick texts. I would like to see competent game management and effective halftime adjustments from Callahan. Would also like to see special teams continue to shine. That was another one. Titans offense getting shut down after halftime. That was a big problem last year, and they didn't score a whole lot in the second half last week. Let me go to Gorilla. Gorilla, before we get to Chad Withrow in the next event. Gorilla, what's going on?
What's going on, man? I love to hear white guys say Gorilla.
You know what messed me up? There's an outdoor hoop I've had at my house for forever, and it's G-O-A-L, Rilla. So it's goal, like the basketball goal, Rilla. And so I've always been saying that. So I say your name wrong because of that. I'm making an excuse.
Yeah.
I got to do that.
No problem, man. It's go real. Go real.
Go real. That's what I
go
that's
real.
What I was, yeah.
Yeah. Go real.
But, hey, D-Mates, once again, man, you're spot on, guy. You're spot on. I do believe that that the coach has no feel for the game. I don't believe he is a NFL head coach. I could be absolutely wrong about that. But I will say that a lot of the miscues that we had, a lot of the drops, you know, he schemed those open. He called those plays. What would the game look like if we had two of those eight back? Then a lot of the uncalled for penalties. That's on coaching, but not necessarily. You know, so I just think that I think we're gonna win this game here, like we should have won the last game. But D-Mates, man, you spot on. I'm gonna hang up and just keep digesting, man. Y'all keep it up.
All right, thanks
Enjoy
for the call.
The show, fellas.
Thank you. Let's go,
Gorilla.
Gorilla. Gorilla.
Gorilla.
Not Gorilla.
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 Is it Gorilla?
We're
keeping
like
it real. We're
like,
keeping it real.
Gorilla.
You have to keep it real.
Gorilla. No. He's going
real. I'm going to practice that because I.
Not Gorilla.
He's been calling us, and I want to do it right.
We got to get it right.
Or I'm just going to put it on Adam.
That's honestly what everyone should do. But, you know.
I mean, I think for this team, he's right. But because of the you know, mindless decision he chose to make before the half, that one, and I said it before, that one moment overshadowed anything else. And then on top of that, you tell everybody you don't know the rule in regards to a guy being in. That dooms you right there.
He sabotaged himself.
Exactly.
On some of this stuff.
Yes, you're right, Gorilla. If it looks different if Calvin Ridley catches the ball, if Calvin Ridley runs the right route, if he challenges the call, if Gunnar Helm, you know, makes the catch on the sideline without juggling it, and possess it at the first time the ball hits your hands, if those things are completions, which they were on, I felt they should have been in the game or were in the game, it looks different. We're not questioning, I think, whether he can call plays. We're questioning, like, is he a true head coach? Like, the decisions he's making, are you a true? But as far as calling plays, yeah, you call some plays that were completions. If they had been completions, I think we'd look at it a little bit different than we did, you know, this past weekend. But they were not completions, and he had a snap foo with the whole series. Then it makes everything look bad.
When we come back, Chad Withrow is going to join us. We'll switch gears. We'll look at the big college matchups. Tennessee, Georgia, Vanderbilt, South Carolina. And we'll ask the question, how is Mr. Aguilar going to respond in the first big showcase game he's got? Stay tuned. We're coming back. A little Remember the Titans vibe to our Motown Friday afternoon. 615-737-1025 is our number. It's time to have our weekly conversation with Chad Withrow, who I think was a youngster in high school when that movie came out. Am I right around the same time? How old were you, Chad, when Remember the Titans came out?
You were close, Willie. I'm a little bit older than that. I was a sophomore in college.
Okay.
Maybe, right? Yeah, 2000. I want to say 2000. Willie, you're the master when it comes to the year a song came out. I feel like you could always say it. I think Remember the Titans was 2001.
He basically said you were in Pampers.
End of my freshman year.
He basically said you were in Pampers, man.
Yeah, he basically said that I'm, 19 years old right now, from what I'm hearing. Willie, I'm 43. I hate to break the news to everyone, but creeping on up there now. So, no, I was alive when Remember the Titans comes out. I remember it well. It was a great film.
I remember the Titans being good, and they would play clips from that movie on the Jumbotron. And so it was right around there, early – maybe right at
2000.
2000. Okay, that's what I was.
Oh, there we go.
Right around there. Okay, so maybe Chad was a freshman. You were almost still in high school. I was not that far off.
This is actually I graduated in the year 2000, and I think that came out fall of 2000. Mm. So it would have been fall of my freshman year at UT that Remember the Titans came out.
And the Tennessee Titans were pretty good that year, 2000.
Yeah,
pretty darn good.
Well, boy, I tell you what, Remember the Times. Those were great times to be a Titans fan back then. It was awesome.
Well, Chad, we want to focus on the weekend ahead in college football because there's some massive matchups here. But there's always that sense early in the season, because the football is becoming like baseball now or some of the other SEC sports, where there's 16 teams in the league and 12 or 13 of them are in the top 25. And it's looking like it's moving that direction. But there's always that sense of, hey, maybe Florida's not as good as we thought they were going to be, or Is Texas a little more gettable than we thought? There's other examples. So I want to ask about the opponents for Tennessee and Vanderbilt this week, because they both, I think, might have a little bit of that going on. South Carolina is ranked 11th. They manhandled Vanderbilt in Nashville up front last year. They played really well, and it was during that time where they really started to take off. But they haven't looked great in their two wins so far. What do you think of the matchup before we get to Tennessee, Georgia, of South Carolina, Vanderbilt?
Well, first of all, I think Vandy should be ranked in the top 25. You know, people will say, well, it doesn't matter. You had the one AP voter. Oh, it doesn't matter what I say. There's, 82 voters, and it kind of balances it out. I think Vandy, with their performance in the second half against Virginia Tech, they should have been in the top 25. That does mean a lot to Vanderbilt, who's not often ranked. So I think that would have been a nice accomplishment. In terms of this game, I look at what Vegas thinks about it. South Carolina is a 4.5-point favorite at home. You mentioned South Carolina is 11th in the country. South Carolina is a college football playoff team right now. Vanderbilt is less than a touchdown underdog on the road at a college football playoff team right now. that shows me that everything Clark Lee said that people laughed at, hey, we want to be the SEC champion, we want to compete for national championships, we want to be in the college football playoff, that's not as far-fetched as you think. Now, we're two games into the season, but that's pretty impressive when you really think about what Vegas thinks about this game and how close these two teams are. Willie, I think this is the best quarterback matchup of the weekend, certainly in the SEC. Give me Diego Pavia versus Lenora Sellers over even a Garrett Nussmeier versus DJ Lagway in LSU in Florida, over Gunnar Stockton and Joey Aguilar. I love these two quarterbacks. I love what they do with their arm and their leg. It's a great opportunity for Vanderbilt. I think South Carolina may have a few too many guys on defense, and then Nick Harbor is going to be hard for Vandy to contain. So I think South Carolina wins this game. But I think it's a dogfight, Willie. I really do. It's a four-quarter game, and Vandy's going to be right there with a chance, and I think it's a real testament to what Clark Lee has done with that program that they're in this spot right now.
All right, so you've got Georgia coming to Knoxville, and Georgia has been they've gained the reputation – until Carson Beck got hurt last year, it's just a juggernaut. It's a huge. They're expected to win every game. Basically, it's a surprise when they lose, but they have looked a little pedestrian so far since Gunnar Stockton took over. They really struggled offensively in the playoff game he played in, and then this year, as he's matured and been the guy, the offense hasn't looked super impressive. So, what is Georgia still Georgia in your mind?
I think we're going to find out on Saturday. I mean, I really think this game is going to tell us everything we need to know about where Georgia is and if, in fact, they've taken a step back. I just don't know what to think about Gunnar Stockton, right? We said this about Stetson Bennett all the time, too. Man, he's just not the biggest. He's not the most talented. But, boy, oh, boy, did that guy know how to win. And he had a great supporting cast. And he was slippery. And he was heady. And he made good plays with his legs when he had to. I think Gunnar Stockton could be a Stetson Bennett-like quarterback for Georgia with a lot of talent around him, but we haven't seen him do it. He got pressed into duty against Notre Dame in the playoff. He did okay, but he's not been in an environment like he's going to be in tomorrow in Neyland Stadium. He's not seen anything like this as a player. So we're going to know, I think, all we need to know about Georgia in terms of if is that juggernaut still alive or have they taken a step back? Because keep in mind, Josh Heupel hasn't scored more than 17 points against Kirby Smart in Georgia. For all that Heupel's accomplished, and he's accomplished a lot, this is the one hurdle he's not gotten over, right? He's got multiple wins, and looking at the rivals, he's got multiple wins against Florida, multiple wins against Alabama. He's perfect against Vandy. He hasn't come close to Georgia and Kirby Smart. Now, most of those games, there's been a huge talent discrepancy where Georgia's a lot better. Tennessee has closed that talent gap. They're still not quite there. Georgia's still the more talented team. But it's in Knoxville. You got a quarterback in Joey Swagular that's playing with a little bit of swag right now. This is the best opportunity that Josh Heupel's had in this game. But if Georgia is in fact Georgia from 2018 and on with Kirby Smart, I don't know that it's going to matter because they have the horses on defense to match up with Tennessee and basically shut out that offense. And that's what Kirby Smart's been able to do over his time.
Now, Chad, after watching the last 2 weeks, and I know it's early, who would you consider if you had to, pick a team right now to win a national championship? Which one of these teams in the SEC would you pick? Would it be Georgia? Would it be LSU or even Tennessee?
I'd probably go right now from what I've seen, Derek. I'd go in order LSU, Georgia, Tennessee. And if we're just going what we've seen against opponents, Tennessee's been better than Georgia through the first 2 weeks. But, I mean, I've seen Kirby Smart do it. I know how many future NFL players he has on offense and defense. I know that he went to the transfer portal and got Noah Thomas from A&M. He got Zachariah Branch from USC. I know how talented those guys are. So I would still give the edge to Georgia to be a national champion-type team. But LSU's got the biggest win in the SEC so far this year. I know Clemson struggled for a half against Troy. But LSU going to Clemson and winning in week one against a top five team, that's the biggest win for the SEC this season. So I'm going to go LSU, Georgia, Tennessee in order, but I'm not sure there's a big gap between those three teams. So I think it's a good question because right now, 2 games into the season, I think in some of those matchups, depending on where the game's played, you could flip a coin. And once again, Vegas is kind of telling us it's a bit of a coin flip with a 3.5-point spread with Tennessee and Georgia this weekend.
It's crazy that, you know, after all these years, you still think that even with them, you know, looking bad, you would throw Alabama in there. But Alabama hasn't been Alabama since Coach Saban left. With that being said, DeBoer, that was a bad loss against FSU. I know they came back and they played extremely well, but it was against an inferior opponent. DeBoer, they play Wisconsin this week. It should be a win, but we can't say that anymore because they've lost that sort of magic on the sideline, and that magic obviously seems to be Coach Saban. So if DeBoer doesn't win this game, what does that mean for him and his coaching staff moving forward?
Oh, goodness. They need to get their resume ready. I mean, they're a three-touchdown favorite.
Collect the $70 million for the buyout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could come up with that, Willie. I mean, if you've got Dave Portnoy and, you know, Larry Ellison, they can pay money for a Michigan quarterback. Certainly someone for Alabama could come up with that buyout money. They're a three-touchdown favorite for a reason. So I'll start there. I think they're going to destroy Wisconsin in this game. I think Wisconsin's a lot better on defense than they were a year ago. I don't think it's going to matter. They're not going to score that much against Alabama. They're going to be quarterbacked by a backup named Danny O'Neill, who both looks and sounds like a guy who should be quarterbacking for Iowa, and that's not a compliment. So that's bad news when you're going to Tuscaloosa against Alabama. Look, if they lose this game, Derek, I think all bets are off and the wheels could fall off. Because every Alabama fan I know, they're pointing to September 27th against Georgia, right? They're like, I don't even care about this game. This is a foregone conclusion to them. Yeah, they beat UL Monroe 73-0. Who cares? Yeah, they're going to beat Wisconsin tomorrow. That's the way Bama fans think. Who cares? They're pointing to the next big opportunity, and that is the game against Georgia in Athens, a team they beat a year ago at home. They got a huge lead. Georgia came all the way back, but they held on to win. I really think that's what Bama fans need to see. Their standard is understandably high after Nick Saban, and they want that standard to be met, and it has not been by Kalen DeBoer so far.
Now, contrast that to Billy Napier. You know, that was a bad loss by his team as well last week. Now, where does he sit as a head coach going into this game versus LSU? Is it more so – does he have to win or does he need to be competitive? Because there's two differences in that. If you're competitive and people see it, they may not hold the loss against you. But if you get blown out, we all know that it's going to be even worse than what you did, what was going on last week with the huge loss last week.
So I think there's a lot of similarities between Billy Napier and Kalen DeBoer. Mm-hmm. They're both really mild-mannered guys. I think they're both really good guys. I think they're, you know, decent people. They're good with their team. I also just don't think that it's working with these programs. Like, they need a little bit of fire, and I don't know these coaches are going to give it to them. Not that they have to or try to be something they're not, but it's not working. And you can look at the discipline issues, the penalties for Alabama. A Florida player, after just seeing it on national TV in the NFL, they spit on a player in Saturday's game and give up a 15-yard penalty in the eventual game-winning drive. Those type of issues keep creeping up. Clock management, questions about play calling with Billy Napier. There are so many things that continue to creep in with him. There's a lot of similarities there with Kalen DeBoer. Derek, they need to win this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can. They beat him 27-16 a year ago. They have the talent to do it. It's a tall task to go in at night in Death Valley and win. But for them to feel secure about things again, you got to steal one back. So even playing close isn't going to be good enough in this. They need to go to LSU and win if they want to get their season back on track. If they lose, you start to look at that schedule. Texas coming up in Gainesville. They've got tough road trips. It's going to be hard for Billy Napier to coach against Tennessee in late November. There may be an interim coaching if they don't win this game on Saturday and get it going back in the right direction.
Yeah, the late season Tennessee-Florida matchup, that's rare, right, that they play that late. The one that I remember is the one that got moved back because of 9/11 the one year. And they played at the very, very end. But most years, that's early. So, Chad, here is the hypothetical choice A, choice B that we're going to hit our listeners with. You tell me which door you would take. Door number one is Joey Aguilar, for what we know right now, takes the ball. He's your man against Georgia. Door number two is a hypothetical. It's Nico without all of the drama, just pretend that nothing happened. There was absolutely nothing. And Nico comes back for his next year. He's happy. The family is happy. And he is your man as you take on Georgia here. Which door would you choose?
It's a great question. Nico didn't play that bad against Georgia a year ago. I'll say that also. They were up 10-0. Yeah, I think it was tied at 17 or tied at 13 at halftime. And then Georgia got it going with the tight ends in the second half and pulled away. But that game was in Athens. I'd take Joey Aguilar because at this point, Willie, when it comes to Tennessee and Georgia, I'll take the unknown over the known. You know, I know that Nico's not beating Georgia. I don't know what Joey Aguilar brings to the table against this Georgia defense. Josh Heupel probably needs to tweak some things and change just a little bit in this matchup too. But give me the unknown in Aguilar because I know what you get with Nico, and I think that's just not quite good enough to beat Georgia. And look, I'm not going to be the guy that comes in and says everything was awful with Nico. He led Tennessee to the playoffs, right?
Right.
He didn't put up great stats, but he was the quarterback of a team that got Tennessee to the initial 12-team playoff and finished 10-2. He made big plays against Alabama, against Florida, to win those games. So I'm not going to completely crap on everything the guy did, but I'd take Aguilar over Nico. It's a great question.
So you're a believer that he might understand and operate a college offense better than Nico would have with another year under his belt.
Yeah,
because that's what I hear about Nico a lot is he doesn't process the field as well as his physical gifts would seem to allow him to.
Yeah, we had Matt Sims, Phil's son, Chris's little brother, former Tennessee quarterback, played for some pretty bad Derek Dooley Tennessee teams. But he's a funny guy, and he's funny talking about his time at Tennessee and playing in the SEC. But we asked him about that comparison, and the way he described it was, he said, I just didn't like Nico's upper body. And what he's saying, he's a guy now who trains and develops quarterbacks. And he says, I'm not talking about him being skinny or any of that. His upper body was a little off with his throws. He never looked like he was in a rhythm. It looked like he was a half a second behind on everything he was about to do. And then he had to speed up his upper body a lot of times. Like now, Nico has the arm to get it there, even when he has to speed it up, but he never looked at rhythm. And he said the biggest difference with Joey Aguilar, what he's saying, he said the guy is seeing it. You know, yeah, it's ETSU and it's Syracuse, but he sees the game better. And he's in a rhythm. He's dropping back. His core, his upper body's in the right spot. It's on time. He doesn't look like he's having to rush it when he throws it. He said that's the biggest difference he sees between the two. So I think there's some validity there. Look, Nico's still a young guy, and Joey Aguilar, I think, is going to be 25 by the end of the season.
He's older. Like that click in college. All right, so, yeah. Chad, we'll let you go on that, but just fact check me on this. Wasn't Matt Sims quarterbacking Tennessee when – the Derek Dooley game where they had like 13 guys on the field at the end of the game against LSU. Wasn't that the Matt Sims?
You had to bring that up, didn't you? You had to.
That was my flashback. Look, I'm a Sims family fan. I was a Giants Phil. I had the Phil Sims poster on my wall when I was growing up. That's how old I am.
Willie, when that happened, I was at the Alabama-Florida game with some buddies, and we're watching at a tailgate. And when Tennessee initially won it, I didn't see the flag or the 13 men on the field. I'm sprinting around the quad, and I jump on my buddy's back screaming, "We're back. We're back, baby. We're back," and celebrating. And everyone's like, "Hey, you may want to come back over here. You may want to see it." So from that moment on, I never celebrate until I see there's no flags on the field when something happens, because I come back to the TV to see all the deliberation about what had happened with the flag and Tennessee having to me. It was bad. And then, of course, they run one more play, score a touchdown, and the rest is history. Derek Dooley, one of the greatest characters in SEC history. Not a great head football coach. Yep. Not a great head football coach.
We'll see if that game comes up in his political campaign as he moves forward.
I'd probably avoid it if I were him.
I'd probably hope that tape has been destroyed.
On the campaign trail.
Yes. Yeah. All right, Chad, thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Have a good weekend.
All right, Chad Withrow, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. We talked to both of them, the dynamic duo, during the course of the week here on the show. All right, so here's the question, 615-737-1025. Who would you choose, whether you're a Tennessee fan or not, who would have the better chance to beat Georgia and snap this losing streak against Georgia? Joey Aguilar, based on what we know, older, early returns good, confidence in him, or if you could wave a magic wand and have Nico sans drama, erase what happened, after the playoff game and he left you high and dry in the spring. None of that happened. You have Nico back for his second year as a starter, junior year overall. Which would you choose? 615-737-102. We'll get D-Mace's answer and my answer when we come back, and your answers as well on the text line and phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. Yes, Smokey, bring it on Friday. It's the weekend, big weekend of football coming up. Big weekend of football. Don't forget, the Blue Raiders of MTSU are going to take on Nevada at 4:00.
Let's go.
And you can catch all the action on Totally Hits 93.3 with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and TotallyHitsNashville.com.
True Blue.
True Blue. Chip Walters, Joe Dubin on the call.
Let's go, Blue Raiders.
Heading out to the state of Nevada in Reno, hanging out. All right, here's our question, and we want to hear from you, the listeners. Hypothetical. This really boils down to, are you a believer? Are you buying stock? Because I get the sense that people are buying stock in a big way on Joey Aguilar. You just heard Chad Withrow. He says, I'll take the unknown. Aguilar still has not been proven against a big-time team, and he's going to get tested on the spot in the spotlight, 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. So the choices are, take Joey Aguilar with what we know. Door number one. Door number two is you take Nico in a hypothetical, no drama happened. Erase the past. And just, he's a normal progression. Quarterbacks in the spring, develops over the summer, and comes back for his junior year, his final, quote, year of his contract. Mm-hmm. The four-year deal.
Yes.
But let's put all the drama aside. He's your man. Who would you rather have quarterbacking in this game? 615-737-1025. Mike from Shelbyville has labeled option number two as Nico Sans Drama Liava.
Sounds Drama Liava.
Nico Sans Drama Liava is his choice.
Okay.
We have another vote. Nico, all the way. No question.
But?
Signed, Vandy fan from Pegram.
I knew it had to be something.
There's a little bias there.
Wonder who he's rooting for in the game.
Exactly.
615-737-1025. Come on. This is a good question. I want texts. I want feedback on there. Who would you take? Are you buying into the Joey Aguilar? Because let's be honest. Mm-hmm. He is gaining momentum big time. Still waiting to see how he does in the spotlight. So who would you take, D-Mace?
Oh, man. In this game, on this level, I would probably tend to take experience over the youth.
Okay.
And that is only in this situation.
So because you're kind of with Chad. Aguilar is older.
Exactly.
He doesn't have as many starts in the Power Four. Mm-hmm.
But he has a lot
of
starts.
But he's played a lot of games. Exactly. Nico is still younger, mm-hmm, age-wise, and just has the 1 year as a starter.
Exactly. And it seems like, you know, Aguilar is reading the defenses or is able to run the offense at a faster pace than what Nico did last year. Now, I know it's unfair to Nico because maybe he would have been, you know, different in his offense this year as opposed to last year. So it's still a good question. Who would you rather have in
because,
this situation?
I think it's very difficult, mm-hmm, if you are a Tennessee fan especially, to put aside, mm-hmm, your bias against Nico to answer this question objectively, right? You're so
UT
mad at Nico, there's no way you would say, yeah, give me Nico back. I know you probably can't go there mentally, but I feel like this is the question you need to ask yourself as you watch, because it was an assumption. Mm-hmm. It was an assumption that Tennessee would take a step back when all that happened last spring, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, what are they going to do? They may well, you are hearing this all over the place. They've come out ahead. They've got a better quarterback. Who knew? But if he doesn't play well tomorrow, I wonder if you would still feel that way.
But that's in comparison to what Nico hasn't done at UCLA. If Nico was good, he's been bad. The team's been bad. But if Nico was good and he wasn't the reason why they were losing, I think people would look at it a little bit different. But you are winning, they lose. No matter how many yards you throw for, people still say we came out on the better end of this.
People, even when Nico, before the drama happened, people were underwhelmed by how he played, even though they were going to the, they went to the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit like, I don't know, I it's not the same, but when Vince Young got the Titans to the playoffs the 1 year when he was, he started, it was, they weren't a great team, but it was 2007, and he had been through some ups and downs, and he got them to the playoffs, but you were still underwhelmed with how he played. You're kind of like, they played good defense, they had a good running game, they were steady, and it wasn't because of Vince. I think you had some of that last year with Nico. It's like, okay, yeah, he did okay, but they played great defense, they ran the ball really well, and so even after, even before the drama started, they felt that way. One texter says, Nico who? Another one says, why is Nico still in the UT conversation? A-A-R-O-N Aaron says that.
Because
people offended that I brought it up? I'm sorry.
No, because I think
I just want to test your mettle. I knew what the answer was going to be, but are you really believing Aguilar is the man? Nobody's going to know until about 6 o'clock tomorrow night.
And that's why it's a good question, because Aguilar has played really well against two inferior opponents. If he comes out and he doesn't play well against Georgia, then I think UT fans, they're going to be looking at it different. But right now, I'm only left, if I'm a UT fan, I'm only left to think he's a good quarterback because of what I've seen. Now, again, if it turns out to be something different after the game, then okay. But right now, he's shown everything that you want to see from a quarterback. He's shown it. His team's winning. He's playing well. The offense seems to be running the way or close to how they want it to run. But if they run into a buzzsaw named Georgia, people could think different.
Georgia is also
coming out
untested
of this game.
Here.
And they're untested,
yeah,
too.
So
I get it.
There's an assumption that Georgia's defense is going to be completely ferocious and awesome all over the field at every position. They haven't. This unit hasn't done it yet, so we'll find out something about them. On our YouTube chat, also driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, I assume that. Is the YouTube chat also brought to you and driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com?
We're going to assume.
I'm going to make that assumption.
Yes.
JP Funk says they're probably about the same, Nico and Aguilar, but Joey passes the eye test a little better. Now, there's something I did not think I would hear.
I would disagree, because if we remember last year, the first couple games for Tennessee, they were on the hype train of Nico because they were beating teams by 70-plus points or 50-plus points last year, and they were all on the hype train. And then all of a sudden they lose to Arkansas, and they're like, oh, is this guy really that good? So, like, he passes the eye test for the first 2 weeks. We'll see, like, once he plays Georgia. But, again, you were on the hype train. Nico was passing the eye test last year during the first two games.
All right, it's time to move on and go to Ask D-Mace. You can continue storyline if you want to ask D-Mace about Tennessee, Georgia, or Vanderbilt, South Carolina, or Titans, Rams, or anything that's on your mind, or questions about life in general.
Yes.
D-Mace has got you. And we've got a prize for the best question to D-Mace today. 615-737-1025. It's a Friday tradition. Ask D-Mace on the show. Then we will take it to the bank at 545. Stay tuned. Final hour of the show coming up here on DVD.